safer on Tefillah, but I hope that next year, at this time, I'll have a safer out on Tefillah, and that maybe they'll ask me to speak again if I write another, if I finish the safer. But not yet. I said to them, isn't it supposed to be like a book launch or something? So now it's making me feel bad that I haven't finished yet. But hopefully, Bli Neder next year this time, we'll have figured that out. I speak, many of you have heard me speak on different topics of Tefillah. It is a passion of mine to try to explain what Tefillah is, the experience of Tefillah, to others. And I want to share with you some thoughts about putting the Ribono Shel Olam back into our lives and even back into our tefillos themselves. There's a story told by the Rosh Yeshiva of Porat Yosef in Yerushalayim that a young married fellow wakes up in the morning, he has a dream, and he's very, very excited to tell his wife, I had the most holiest dream. I must have had a wonderful day in Yeshiva yesterday. I had the most amazing dream. She says, what did you dream about? What was it? She says, I was walking in this long hallway, and I kept passing thing after thing and nodding at me, and I kept going forward and forward. And finally, I found myself speaking. She said, to who? To the Mashiach? He said, no, to God himself. I was actually speaking to God himself. And she said, don't you do that every day? I do that every day. And he felt very silly because he was, of course, engaged most of his day in what we should consider to be spirituality, but as most of us, had very little connection with the Ribono Shel Olam. Very little kesher with the Ribono Shel Olam. People can go through much of their lives, live ostensibly very, very frum lives, and have very little to do with the Ribono Shel Olam. When I was a shul rabbi for many years, so people would ask me before the Yom Noraim what they should do this year. I'm glad that they thought I was a person to ask. I'm glad that they were asking. What should I do? What should be my thing this year, Rabbi? What should I be up to? And inevitably, I would try to explain to them that as opposed to the knee-jerk reaction, which is to take on something new, that they should try to add meaning to something they're doing already. Because the reality is that we spend an enormous amount of God time, but we get very little for it. And people want to do something new, and they want to do something else that's not connected to the Ribono Shel Olam. They want to take on another thing, whether a chumrah or even a halacha. They want to take on something else. But the reality is that there's so much that we do already. There's so much that we sacrifice. There's so much time that we already set aside, and yet we don't really have much to show for it. I was last year at a panel in Los Angeles with the great Dr. Ronan Novick from Azrieli. And we were leading a panel on spirituality in Los Angeles. It was a very interesting discussion. Everybody wants to know about spirituality. So we spoke for some 45 minutes, and then we took questions. And this fellow gets up in the back and says, Rabbi, it's very nice what you say, but you don't do what you preach. This guy knows me. It's a little strange. A little taken aback. He said, my son is in Yeshiva University, and he's in that YP program. He says he has absolutely no time for spirituality. He said he gets up in the morning, he's exhausted, he goes to Minyan, and then he learns, you tell him to learn from 9 to 3. And then at 3 o'clock he has to go to run to his college classes. And then, because you're in courage clock, he plays medicine, he might sit here, and 10 o'clock is Meyer, and then he has to do his work, and he has absolutely no time for spirituality. I said, listen to yourself. Could you imagine, let's say you had a colleague, a non-Jewish colleague, and the non-Jewish colleague said to you, what does your son do? Oh, he goes to college. It's very nice. Does he do anything else? Does he have a job? No, actually, he spends like 9 hours a day studying ancient Aramaic texts about the will of God. And like an hour and a half a day, he's in like silent meditation with the Lord. I think he's literally a religious fanatic. Most YP guys, I guess, are religious fanatics. Most everybody, all of us are religious fanatics. Have you ever tried to explain to someone who was helping in the house, to someone who's a babysitter, to some, what kind of lives we lead. We lead incredibly Jewish lives. If we were lucky or unlucky enough to be born with it, we don't necessarily think about it. How many hours a year do we spend in tefillah anyway? Even people who just come to shul on Shabbos morning, how many hours a year do people spend in shul? And they get very little out of that experience. I said, the problem is not that your son has no time for spirituality. It's that, like most of us, we don't inject God into what we're doing. When we're learning Torah, we're not interfacing with God. When we're talking to God, we're not actually talking to God. And perhaps a place for us to start would be, rather than to think of some new idea, just to try to take the time that we're already set aside. Whatever that time is, whatever the amount of tefillah time that you have in your schedule, and just to try to make that meaningful. To try to have an experience of tefillah. Kutzker most famously said that the Ribono Shel Olam is wherever you let him in. The Ribono Shel Olam is wherever you let him in. And it's very true. Especially if we're already spending so many hours of God time. But do we let him in? Really, speaking to the Ribono Shel Olam should be something that's very simple. I think it is really very, very simple, and we often make it very complicated. We try too hard. Most of the books that are written, talking about Sfarim, you go down and you look in the Tefillah section, most of the books that are written about Tefillah make Tefillah more complicated, not less complicated. Usually when you go to a Tefillah shiur, you get a very complex idea. And now you have even more to think about when you get up to that particular tefillah. That doesn't necessarily help us connect to the Ribono Shel Olam. Most tefillah lectures, most tefillah education is wonderful. It's great. But it's about biur tefillah. Trying to understand what the particular tefillah is about. But tefillah starts way before that. Tefillah starts way before understanding what a single word means. The first level of kavana, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik says, the first level of kavana, the Grach says, is simply to know that I'm standing in front of the Ribono Shel Olam. Even if I don't understand a single word that I'm saying. Now, one of the challenges that we have is that many of us who, again, were privileged, I guess, to go to Yeshiva Day School, so we learn the mechanics of tefillah. And that's really, we'll speak about it a little more at the end, but that's sometimes the best thing you can do with a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old, is teach them the mechanics of tefillah. How to say the words, when to bow, how to do this, how to sing the words. But very rarely are we talked to about what it means to talk to God. It's not so easy to do that with a 4-year-old. You can, we'll talk about that. But certainly, even if you'd argue that it's not so easy to do when they're 4, the problem is that, understandably, we're embarrassed to bring it up after a kid's been davening for 7 or 8 years. Right? Is 7th and 8th grade the right time? Like, when do people start realizing there's a God? Shana Aleph, basically. Yeah, Shana Aleph. That's when people, I mean, you're going to wait all the way till the first year in Eretz Yisrael. But it's a very, very difficult thing. The Ribono Shel Olam wants us in the most simple way to just talk with him. I remember when I used to work, when I was in NYU, I used to work for NCSY in New Jersey. And I used to travel up and down the New Jersey Parkway to get to wherever I was going, Englishtown, Long Branch, all those places in the middle of Jersey. And inevitably, I would be on the road. I was doing like high school clubs. Don't ask me where I was for my yeshiva college classes, but whatever. I was inevitably on the road in the winter when it was time to daven mincha. So what do you do when you have to daven mincha on the road? So you pull over, right? You pull over on the side, hopefully. Hopefully you find time, but you pull over. I pull over in a gas station. And then you have that whole thing going on. We've all had this, like, is it better to daven and talk to myself and people think I'm crazy? Is that a really big chil Hashem? Is it better not to daven at all that way? You know, we've all had this in an airport or in something or another. So I used to daven by the side of my car. But they didn't have SUVs then. All the cars were kind of low. It just looked ridiculous. I was so self-conscious that I really couldn't dive. So I finally came up with an idea. There used to be, back in the Middle Ages, there was something called a payphone. Something called a payphone. And the payphone, which was a phone that was attached to something, was in like a glass booth. Okay, I don't think that exists at all. There are a few payphones which for some reason haven't been taken down. But inside a glass booth is like nothing sitting. But there was this glass booth so that other people couldn't hear you. And you'd step into the booth and you'd talk. And in order to stop looking like a complete idiot, I would do this when I had to dive in. I would take three steps forward into the booth, I'd close the thing, I'd put in a quarter, and I'd talk. And I realized I was having some amazing shmoneserets. Because it's normal to talk to somebody on the phone and not see them. Now, I'm not suggesting you try this on your cell phones or your this and that. Obviously, there's a way that we dive in. But the idea that tefillah is simply talking to the Ribbono Shel, simply talking to some thing who says he's our father. He says he's our father. Let's just talk to him. But we rarely do that. We rarely let him in. The goal of tefillah, I believe, is to have one moment. I know you may be a little surprised that I'm going to say this, but I see personally my goal in tefillah to have a moment when I feel like I'm standing before it. I don't go in with the goal that I'm going to have kavana for every single word and my mind is not going to wander. The davening is a couple of minutes. We're not attuned today that we could stay focused on anything for a couple of minutes. My goal is that I should have a moment during tefillah, where I actually stand before the Ribbono Shel Olam and I feel like I'm there, and I correct something. I remember that he's there. I remember that he's up there. I remember that I'm dependent on him. Shemona Esrei, I think, in the modern world, is more about creating moments of realization, moments of inspiration, than necessarily, obviously, the more we can put together, the more wonderful it is. But to be able to have those moments, and how many times we daven Shemona Esrei, we don't have one of those moments. The Baal Shem Tov was famous for saying that if I'm the same person when I take three steps back as when I took three steps forward, that I haven't really davened. Tefillah is supposed to be a transformational experience. That's what we're going to talk about. How to make it that I'm different. Now, mind you, I don't stay different for very long. It's not a permanent transformation. But that's why I have to daven every couple of hours. Whatever it is that I'm supposed to get out of davening, Chazal understood is not going to last for very long. That's why I got to keep going and doing it again. Why do I keep asking Hashem for the same things? Why do I have to daven so many times a day? Well, obviously, whatever it is that we get from being with them only lasts for so long. The Rabbi Yehuda... Reb Yehuda Levi says in the Kuzari very beautifully that tefillah is to the day what Shabbos is to the week. Not every moment is supposed to be Shabbos. I mean, eventually we hope for Yom Shekulo Shabbos. I would say Ulevai Shiyaspal Adam Kol Yom Kulo. But in the meantime, we have Shabbos. Shabbos is a correction. Shabbos is a correction. If we go too long without a Shabbos, it's going to be a problem. If you look at the fourth chelek of the Ramchal's Derech Hashem, the Ramchal speaks of the Torah of the mitzvos as almost a diet. Why does Shabbos come every 7 days? Because obviously whatever Shabbos has to correct is required every 7 days. If it was 8 days, there wouldn't be enough of it in our schedule. But we should be able to handle 6 days without it. And then already we're just too off. We're not aligned anymore. It's the same thing with tefillah. Tefillah, there's just enough tefillah that we can still function. But it somehow is supposed to, every couple of hours, put us right back on track with the understanding that we're going to get off track again and we're going to go back. And we're going to talk about what that track is. What am I supposed to get out of standing before the Ribbono Shel Olam? But it's those moments. It's those moments of tefillah that make the difference. I'll just mention two moments that I try to use. And then we'll talk about the harder Shmoneh Esrei, the Bakasha. The first moment that I think all of us can try to seize is the moment of Hashem Sfasai Tiftach Ufi Yagiti Lasev. It's very interesting that our tefillah begins with a tefillah that we should be able to daven. Obviously, Chazal understood it was going to be difficult what we're trying to do. We start with a tefillah that we should be able to stand before the Ribbono Shel Olam. Where is that pasuk from? Hashem Sfasai Tiftach Etzem Tehillah. But where? In reference to what was this pasuk said? Hashem Sfasai Tiftach Ufi Yagiti Lasecha. So it's in chapter 51, Nun Aleph of Tehillim, which is the Mizmor of David HaMelech after the sin of Bathsheba, trying to reconnect with the Ribbono Shel Olam after he's made a mistake. What I try to do when I say that pasuk, and it's so hard to catch ourselves, but we could train ourselves at least to try to say that pasuk slowly and kind of catch ourselves. What was David HaMelech saying to the Ribbono Shel Olam? Why was he saying Hashem Sfasai Tiftach? He was embarrassed. He had forgotten about the Ribbono Shel Olam. Whatever the sin was, exactly how it happened, that doesn't matter. The point is that he had forgotten about the Ribbono Shel Olam, and now he needed the Ribbono Shel Olam. We've all had this, where we wronged or offended or let down somebody that unfortunately we need something from. Oh, it usually works out that way. That's usually the person that we ended up upsetting. And we don't even know what to say. We're about to ask the Kodesh Baruch Hu for everything we need, but we kind of forgot about him. We haven't been thinking about him in the last few hours. So one powerful place to stop in Shmoneh Esrei is right at the beginning. Hashem Sfasai Tiftach. Oh, I'm back. I haven't really paid that much attention, but I'm back. Now I want to talk to you again. Would you forgive me for kind of drifting over the last couple of hours? Now I'm back to talk to you. There's another powerful place that I try to stop, and that is in Modin. It's a longer thing. You can, I have a shir on Vayi Torah, you could listen to one. Modim, I think, is a very, very powerful, powerful tefillah. But what Modim really is an admission more than a thank you. The word Modeh, we know Modeh b'miktzat, doesn't mean to thank. In fact, the Hebrew word Todah actually doesn't mean thank you. There really is no word in Hebrew for thank you. You may be shocked to know that. There is no word in Hebrew for thank you. The word is, I admit that you helped me. Not so hard to say thank you, it's hard to admit that I needed help. It's hard to admit that I couldn't do it myself. The reason why we don't say thank you very often is because it's like, you know, either it was coming to me or, you know, come on, you couldn't have possibly helped a guy like me. When we say modim and we bow, we're basically saying with the Ribbono Shel Olam, I admit that everything is from you. Anisecha v'anifosecha shebechol eis erev avoker. Everything, at every moment, every revoke of its arrival, everything is from you. Try the following. When I get to the words, when I go through the Nilos and the Nisim and everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, and I say, it's B'chol Eis, at every moment, Erev Avoker V'Tzarayim. What's the next words? Hatov Ki Lo Chalu Rachamecha. Please. You know what's so great about you? You don't stop it. You don't stop giving me these things. Take a moment. After B'chol Eis, Erev Avoker V'Tzarayim, I stop in my Shmoneh Esrei and I actually listen to my heartbeat. And I take a breath. And I realize, oh my God, my body's working. Well, I pretty much took that for granted since the last time I took Shmoneh Esrei. And then I try to move outwards and I say, wow, I got limbs and I have clothing on. Who gave me that? And then I start to think of all the things that I have opportunity. I say, wow, I have a family. I have grandchildren. It's crazy. Until the point where I get so overwhelmed, which only takes about 15 seconds, with all the stuff that Kadosh Baruch Hu has given to me. And then I say, Atov ki lo chalo rachamecha. You know, I might have asked you for a lot of stuff in those brachos, but do me a favor, just keep the stuff you've given me already. That's one of those moments. I don't always have kavan for Alat Tzadikim, Alat Chasidim, and I try to have Olam HaShin, a lot of bad things and bad people. It's, there is something to be to watching your Twitter feed right before you daven and seeing what Iran is saying. But okay, but those moments can those are transformational moments. Those are transformational. My whole body changes when I say that. I'm like looking up like this, and then when I'm just overwhelmed by how much he's given me for free. But the main place that we have to ask the Ribono Shel Olam, the main point of davening, are the bakashos. The bakashos. It's interesting. Sometimes we think that the bakashos, that the middle section of the 13 brachos, is what we get in exchange for all the praise and the thanks. Right? That's the way we think of a human being. Like, if I give you enough thank you, and if I flatter you enough, and I say thank you, and I send you gifts, then I get to ask for 13 wishes. Not 3 wishes, I get 13 wishes. Right? But we know from a variety of sources that that's actually the main part of Shemoneh Esrei. Asking God for things is the main correction that we're making. The main thing we're changing is, instead of thinking that we can do it, remembering that he's the one that does it. He wants our bakashot. It's not something he gives us. La'olam yisader adam. Gemara says a person should be misader shivcho shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You should be misader the shevach. That's the first part. Va'achar kach yitpalel. Yitpalel is equivalent with the middle section. That's what it's about. How do we make that middle section meaningful, and how do we get something, anything, out of that middle section? I remember there's a fascinating piece that I saw by Rabbi Steinsaltz, Shaver for Shlomo. Rabbi Steinsaltz has a 2-volume set called Hasidur VaHatfilah, an encyclopedia of tefillah, which most of which is wonderful, but it's bigger tefillah. But occasionally he has these nuggets that are unbelievable when he talks about things like Kavan. So Rabbi Steinsaltz makes the following assumption. There are a lot of reasons why I can't have Kavan in Davening. Because there's a lot of stuff going on in my life. There's the thing I'm late for, and the test I got to take, and the concern I have with this, and there are lots of things on my head. Rabbi Steinsaltz makes the following assumption. The Ribono Shel Olam is willing to forgive the fact that we don't have kavana in Shemoneh Esrei because we're bothered by something. As long as we ask for that something. So if I have a big test coming and I'm really too nervous and I went too long and I got to run in and I just got to daven a quick shachris, the Ribono Shel Olam is okay if I blow through the shachris. But if I didn't ask him for help on the test, then what was that? At least to salvage whatever's bothering me so much, at least to turn that and make that a vehicle to ask the Ribono Shel Olam. But we don't ask the Ribono Shel Olam even for the things that we're in the middle of. A few years ago, there was a meeting in 1214 in the President's Conference Room. You may have heard Yeshiva University had a few financial problems. You know, it was really looking bad for a while there, and a bunch of us were sitting in the room all day figuring out how to straighten out YU. So the meeting was like literally the whole day. It started like 9:30 in the morning. They brought a lot of senior people into the room, and we're all talking all day long. And it's getting close to 4:30, and it was time for Mincha. So we kind of said, you know what, we're losing our minds already. Forget about it. We're just going to daven Mincha, and then that's it. We'll go on for the day. So we made a minyan. I encouraged the ladies to stay and daven in the back. Most of them didn't stay, but, you know, whatever. We made our minyan. I daven the Shliach Tzibur. I was the rabbi in the room, so I standing out there, I daven the Shliach Tzibur. I turned around after the Shemoneh Esrei, and I don't know why I had the guts to do this, but I said, how many of you, I turned to the man nearby, how many of you, daven, said something to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Shemoneh Esrei that the Ribono Shel Olam should help out the yeshiva? Should give us something. And of course, nobody raised their hand. I said, this is so ridiculous. We just spend 9 hours trying to figure out how to turn around the university, and the Ribono Shel Olam could do it in a second. There are people passing away all the time with enormous amounts of money that they're giving to nobody. He can do that for us. That's not a problem. He could have someone on our board of directors win billions of dollars. We're sitting and spinning our wheels. How could it be that we didn't even think to ask him for help with that? That's the way we function. We don't even think the simplest things we don't ask him for. It's not in our tefillah. The Maharal says that the goal of tefillah is simply to be totally on the Ribbono Shel Olam. Simply to put ourselves in a place where we recognize that we need the Ribbono Shel Olam and he can help us out. But we so rarely take the simplest of opportunities to ask him for help, even when we're talking to him already. The reality is that we only really talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Let's face it. The only time we really ask the Ribbono Shel Olam for something, in a meaningful way, is when we have done everything else humanly possible to try to do it first. As the doctors say with a sick patient, now it's in the hands of God. As opposed to from the time the person was born. What do you mean now it's in the hands of God? But that's the way we function. I've done everything else. I've gotten to try everything I can, so now I'm going to daven. Daven myself. There's a fascinating Ramban in the beginning of the 30th chapter of Bereishis. It's something only the Ramban could say. I would never have the guts to say it myself. The Ramban points out that it's soon after Rachel complains to her husband that she doesn't have children that she gives birth to Yosef. She turns to her husband and she says, I want to die if I can't have children. And Yaakov, it appears from the text, answered like a typical guy, what do you want from me? That's what it looks like. It looks like he was a very holy man. The text clearly seems to say that he says, Atachas Elokim Anochi? What do you want me to do? The Ramban says a fascinating thing. Do you know what she wanted him to do? She assumed that he was davening for her and that she didn't have to daven. Rachel Imenu. She assumed that Yaakov Avinu was davening for her, and when he responded in that way, it was the first indication that he wasn't davening. And you know what she did? For the first time, says the Ramban, she got down, she talked to the Ribbono Shel Olam herself, and the Ribbono Shel Olam said, here, here's a child. It's usually not that simple. But it goes to show that it is often not intuitive to just talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam ourselves. There's a very interesting sefer that came out last year, 2 years ago, in Eretz Yisrael, written by a Breslover, Rechassid, anonymous, called HaPegisha. It's a very fascinating sefer. Moshe Weinberger told me I had to read the Sefer, so I had to read the Sefer. So when I got the Sefer. HaPegisha is a fascinating Sefer just about talking to God. So he tells a great story. The author of this Sefer has a friend who won't kill bugs. Okay, we all have one of those either as a friend or as a family member. He's very annoying people who won't actually kill a bug. They need to get the bug and capture the bug and put the bug outside and say be free and the whole thing like that. One of my kids is like that. It drives me nuts. If the bug is in my space, it's chayav misa, so we should kill the bug. That's what you do with a bug. Do you know how hard it is to catch a bug? So he's with this friend and he's got one of these friends. So he's running after one of these jukes, one of these Israeli cockroaches that's somewhere between a cockroach and a dinosaur. You've all seen them. You've all turned on the light in Eretz Yisrael, and they scattered like that. And he's running after this thing, and he won't kill it. He's just running after it to capture it. So he's running, and he's catching from one side to the other. It's 10 minutes, he says. He's watching his friend run after this thing. And finally, he's got the thing caught in the corner. And he's moving in not for the kill, but for the very pleasant capture. And he's looking at the bug, and he's like really making eye contact with this bug, with this cockroach. And suddenly, the cockroach pulls out a pair of wings. It's not a cockroach, it's a beetle. And it flies right over his shoulder. He's so mad. But he's so mad because he says to the cockroach, I don't understand. If you had a pair of wings, why didn't you use them? Now, don't do that in front of a friend who's writing a sefer on tefillah, because he's going to write you up. But he says, that's what we all do. We all do everything we can. I was just giving a shiur like this in Eretz Yisrael. I passed that Paz station right out to Route 1 when you leave Yerushalayim. And he gives a mushel of a fellow who's trying to get a tramp from the Paz station there. And he's trying to get a tramp and he's late and he has an appointment and he's got to get out somewhere to Modi'in. And he's trying. And he tries everything he can. And after 40 minutes, he finally says to the mushel, could you help me out here? I really need a tramp. Why did you wait 40 minutes? Wait 40 minutes. Now, I know what you'll tell me. You'll tell me that there's a concept called hishtadlus. Listen closely. There's something called hishtadlus, and we're not supposed to just sit around and wait for the Ribbono Shel Olam to save us. We're not supposed to be that guy when the flood comes and he sends boat after boat after boat. Who do you think sent the boats? And you're just waiting there till you drown. The Ramchal says something very powerful. Listen closely. The Ramchal says that the ikar hishtadlus is tefillah. The ikar hishtadlus is tefillah. Not putting in hishtadlus means just standing there and waiting. But asking the Ribbono Shel Olam for help, that's hishtadlus. You can't just do that. You're supposed to do other things. But the ikar hishtadlus is to say, can you give me a hand? But we always forget. I gave a shiur on tefillah this year in Chicago. And whenever I fly to Chicago for a shiur, so the deal is, I love Chicago, but I don't really have a lot of time. I'm going to go in just long enough to get, I'm going to land, I'm going to go right from O'Hare to the shul, I'm going to leave just enough time to give the shiur, go to Romanian, get a salami, and get back on the plane. And it takes a while because they always think, every time I do this, they think it's a pipe bomb. Every time. How many Jews go to this one deli in Chicago, they get salamis, and they get back on the plane? Every time they give me a hard time. So I worked it out great. I gave it a shiur. It's terrific. This guy volunteers to give me a trip over to Romanian. Turns out he's a machanech in town. It's a wonderful. We had a wonderful conversation about tefillah education. It was wonderful. He drops me at Romanian. So I'm in Romanian, and I start getting into conversation with the lady behind the desk. If any of you are from Chicago, they're a little crazy. They're a little crazy there. So, and they look at New Yorkers like they're from a different planet. So I start talking to her. I said I wanted a pastrami sandwich with ketchup. Looked at me like I wanted cream cheese on my pastrami sandwich. You're only allowed to have just this bread and the mustard, and that's how you do it. I said, fine, make it like you do it. And then I realized that my bag was missing. That one. Which was bad, because I had to be on a plane in about 90 minutes. I really timed this to the whatever. So I started freaking out because my first thought is I've definitely left it in this guy's car, but I have no idea who it was. It was very nice that an anonymous guy gave me a trip to the store, but I have no idea who it was. So I'm making phone call after phone call. Who is this? What is this? Where everything? Finally, I realized I left my bag on a chair in the store. And then I said, I can't believe I just gave a shiur on tefillah. And it didn't occur to me to ask you for help. I did say thank you. As soon as I saw it, my first reaction was shkoyach, and that was fun. Shkoyach. But why? Why doesn't it occur to us that when we need something, that it can come from the Ribbono Shel Olam? How do we make this part of our lives, part of our tefillah? One thing we can do when we daven. Is to ask the Ribbono Shel Olam for everything that we need. Simply everything that we need. There's a fascinating sefer which I would not have come across if I wasn't doing so much tefillah research over the years called Kuntres Hatzava. It's a sefer, very short sefer by Reb Shmuel Topolansky. Shmuel Topolansky was in Eretz Israel. He died in 1945. He was the son of Reb Nisanel Topolansky, who was famous enough to make Wikipedia, but not the son. Rabbi Nisanel Topolansky was a big tefillin guy in Eretz Yisrael, and he also helped create the Luach for Eretz Yisrael. So his son wrote this short piece, famous piece called Kuntros HaTzavah. He writes as follows. Tisamtsu v'tisraglu l'ispal Hashem Yisbarach b'chol eis v'b'chol shah v'akol dover v'akolin. Get used to speaking to the Ribbono Shel Olam and asking him for the littlest of things as you go through your day. V'akol pu'ula v'akol ma'ora, for everything you have to do in every occasion. V'chein liten shevach v'adoyel Hashem Yisbarach v'akol tova v'chesed shemagilo. You don't have to be restricted to the Shemoneh Esrei. You're allowed to talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam outside the Shemoneh Esrei. But Iker HaTfilah HaMekubelis Yoser Hi B'Tfilas Yudches She'az Hu'ez Ratzon. There's no doubt, he says, that the main opportunity to talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam is when you're in the middle of your Shemoneh Esrei. And he says, ask the Ribbono Shel Olam for everything that you need. What are we afraid of? Why don't we stop and ask him for things? Whatever you follow, you do it after Yul Ratzon at the end, you do it in Shema Koleinu, you do it in a bracha that it's appropriate to, you do it in Refa'enu. Why don't we do more of this? We don't need things. There are people who daven very, very long Shemoneh Esreis. I won't mention his name, but one of the older Rosh Yeshiva in the Yeshiva, when asked why he davened such a long Shemoneh Esrei, he says, what am I going to do? I have a lot of children and grandchildren. Is a grandchild not worth mentioning by name in the Shemoneh Esrei? Why are we in such a rush? Why don't we just ask him? Ask him for the things that we need. I'm so amazed how excited people must be about Chazaras HaShatz. Why is everybody trying to finish in time for Chazaras HaShatz? Who's excited here by Chazaras HaShatz? Seriously. We can't go anywhere anyway. I understand if you're davening b'yachidus. I understand maybe Ma'ariv. But like Shachris and Mincha, I just don't get it. You can't go anywhere anyway. You're not going to get out any faster. You're standing before the Ribbono Shel Olam. Why are we rushing? And why aren't there more things that we ask the Ribbono Shel Olam? Yonasan Eibshitz says in the Yaros Dvash, he says that there's a mitzvah mid the Rabbanon of Tefillah and a mitzvah min HaTorah. The mitzvah mid the Rabbanon, listen closely, of Tefillah is to say the words. The mitzvah min HaTorah of Tefillah is to say them to God. And he points out that very often the only time we're mekayim the mitzvah min HaTorah is when we ask him for particular things. We so rarely have no kavana during the rest of davening. So sometimes, it's not that, oh, I'll add something in Shema Koleinu, I'll add something in Yul HaRatzon. That's the Iker min HaTorah Kiyum of Tefillah, is that moment that I ask them for something particular. And he writes that if you can't be Mechadesh something in Shemoneh Esrei, you really couldn't possibly have davened. How could that be? How could there have been nothing to put into your Shemoneh Esrei? Nothing to pray for. And as I said before about modim, if we're so lucky that we can't think of anything else that we need, then how much harder do we have to pray that he not take what we have away? The reality is, I always used to say this to my show before Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, we're always asking Kadosh Baruch Hu for new stuff. We all probably have about 90-95% of what we need to be happy already. So minimally, we could ask him just that it should stick around. That those things should be protected. It's something we have to practice. I remember when I used to teach in seminary before I joined YU, one of my students made up a magnet you're supposed to put on your refrigerator with a little tefillah to say when you're taking your medicine. She made up like 1,000 of these magnets. She gave me. I don't think it's on my fridge anymore. But I still say it every time I try to take medicine. You know how amazing it would be if everything we do, we say, give me a hand. It's so easy, but we forget and we listen and we miss all these other opportunities. The Aris Dvash writes that there are, by the way, some other benefits of talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam. First of all, he says that the more we talk to him, the less likely we are to sin. Because the more we realize everything is dependent on him, the less we're going to likely try other ways and want to misbehave. And he also writes, and we mentioned this at the beginning, about educating young children. It's a question I'm asked all the time. How are you supposed to get kids to daven? And I say, don't get them to daven, just get them to talk to Hashem. They'll eventually daven. It's something that we can model. Please God, Ribbono Shel Olam, Shalayim, and parents. It's something that we can model for children very easily. A child is getting out of the car and they're in second grade and they have their first spelling test. So ask Hashem for help. That we can teach. We can't. It's not about the words. I had a phenomenal second grade teacher who made us a bet, basically, that we couldn't say Baruch Shamar without making a mistake. She said, you can go as slow as you want, but you can't make any mistakes. And if you make a mistake, you don't get the prize. Nobody did it in the class, because we all went too quickly. That's great. But it's simpler than that. We could simply model for children, and for others, and even for people in a meeting that we're at, if we do so politely. Did anybody think of asking Hashem? Did anybody think of including him? On the one hand, what I suggested this evening seems like a tremendous, tremendous burden. It means that suddenly I have to be thinking about God all the time, as if that was a difficult, bad thing. Nah, man, come on, it's like tough enough to daven three times a day. Now you tell me I gotta mean it, and I gotta ask him for everything that goes on. But it's really a tremendous relief. It's really a tremendous relief. If we daven properly, we should feel at the end of davening that it's not our burden alone. It's not just up to us. On the one hand, we have to give of ourselves a little bit. We have to admit that we can't control it ourselves. And that's tough for our egos. But there's something very comforting knowing that there's going to be someone with me on this who's very, very powerful and can make it happen and can figure out how to make it right even if it goes wrong. We know that when we take three steps forward, we take three steps forward to sort of enter into God's office, right? I guess that puts us in the mood. There's something a little bit heretical about that. Because as we know, Hashem was also where we were three steps back. So don't imagine that he's only in front of us. Don't walk in front of me and whatever you say, and Hashem is here, Hashem is there. Hashem is truly everywhere. So it's a little weird to take three steps forward, but it works. At least we get into the mood. And when we take three steps back, we're leaving his office, right? If we dive into Good Shemoneh Esrei, then we should imagine when we're taking three steps back that he's leaving with us. I'm not leaving him in the office. He's holding my hand. I'm pulling him out of the office. That's the purpose of Shemoneh Esrei. That's the correction. I've been living for the last few hours as if he wasn't the one in charge. And every few hours I come back and I say, Hashem Sfasai Tiftach. I'm embarrassed, but I blew it. I again forgot that you were the one really in control, and I started acting the last few hours as if I was in control. Let's do this again. And let's leave the office together. I'm going to lose his hand. I'm going to let go. If it's a good Shemoneh Esrei, I might be holding on for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. But that's why I get to Galvin again in a few hours. To go back in, to go into his office, to try once again to pull him out, to bring him into my life, to try again and again and again and again. People say, why do you have to daven so often? It's amazing how little we daven. Because every single time is a correction to try to teach myself, not when I'm 21, 22, 25, but by the time I'm done, to have done this enough times to actually feel like he's with me throughout the day. Questions? Thoughts? Yes?
Chazal say that if a person doesn't show us their issues, so Chazal say that quote unquote, God doesn't listen to his prayers. So, obviously, he does, but.
Right. So it's clearly what Chazal mean is God doesn't listen to his prayers the way that he listens to them when there's in a minyan. Right? There's clearly the end of the sentence is missing. It is an interesting thing. I just read a fascinating sefer called Shovel Echol Nefesh. I highly recommend it in Eretz Yisrael on Inyanei Tefillah. And it's one of those books you wouldn't find at this farm sale or whatever. It's just one of those books that you find in one some random Israeli farm store. So he writes, it's very interesting that he said if you were trying to have an intimate conversation with somebody, you'd never take 9 other people with you. It's like weird. Like he says, you're going to talk to your psychologist about like your inner thoughts, and you say, "Oh, guys, come on, let's go. Let's come in together, right? Psychology instead of mincha. It's a little strange." He says that it's true that actually you might have more kavana purely if you're yourself, but there are competing values. And the competing value that we're asking as a tzibur, for the tzibur, he says is even more important. And that's another kind of correction, that when you daven with a minyan, you not only have a correction vis-a-vis God, you have a correction vis-a-vis your fellow Jew. That really, we thought we acted the last few hours, since we were in the last minyan together, we acted like we were individuals, but it turns out we really need each other. And it turns out that without each other, it's not going to work. So there is something very powerful about that experience, but there's nothing else that would support that he doesn't listen to us. It just means it's more powerful than a minyan. Any other questions? Yes?
He once told a story in a different function about at a baseball game.
Let me end with this. My first experience in tefillah was when I was a little kid at a Yankee game. When I was a kid, the Yankees were pretty terrible, and as they are now, I think. And I grew up in the Bronx, so it was like a really big deal. And one year the Yankees finally made the playoffs. And my mother actually worked across from Yankee Stadium in a bowling alley, teaching bowling. She was a college professor of bowling. I know there was such a thing. There is done that. She was a phys ed professor. So she came home and she said, "Oh, do you want tickets to tonight's game?" It was clearly a rhetorical question. It was the deciding game between the Yankees and the Royals, 1976. I was alive in 1976. I wasn't that old, a little kid. And so we went to this game. So the Yankees were up 6-3. Has anyone been to a Yankee playoff game? Okay, I was at a Yankee playoff game as a kid. It's one of the most exciting things you could possibly, it's unbelievable. So the Yankees were going to win the pennant. And this was a big deal. And it was 6-3 Yankees. And everyone was flipping out. The place was just so loud. You couldn't hear anything. And basically, the Royals tied it up in the eighth inning. And we went into the bottom of the ninth inning. And this is one of the most famous moments in Yankee history. You could see it in the Hall of Fame. Cooperstown. A fellow by, of all things, named Christopher. Now, Christopher Chambliss, who became a hitting coach. So Chris Chambliss gets up into the batter's box. And I'm going like this. So my father says, "Mark, what are you doing?" That was before I had a stage name in Athens. So I just marked it. So he said, "Mark, what are you doing?" So I said, "I'm praying to Hashem that Chris Chambliss should hit a home run." At that point, given our seats, I was like closer to the remoter show off than to the field. But I'm saying, "I'm praying Chris Chambliss should hit a home run." And on the first pitch, bottom of the ninth inning, one of the most famous moments in sports history. He hits the first pitch, there's a crack. I didn't see anything, there's something like this tall, and everybody jumps up. And the only thing I see is the ball going over the wall in right field. And Chris Chambliss Taka on the first pitch hit a home run, and the Yankees won the pennant. And the place went unbelievably crazy. Bronx people were talking about it. Bronx people. At that time, if you see at the end of a sports game now, a Yankee game, at the end of a World Series, they're like people on horses to make sure that people don't storm the field. For some reason, they didn't think the New Yorkers would do anything if the Yankees won. So everyone from all the bottom sections all poured out on the field. He didn't even touch home plate, it turned out. They mobbed him. He got the first and everyone came on the field. He never even touched the bases. It was a whole famous machloikis, the poiskim, whether he touched the plate. And everybody's screaming, "We're number one, we're number one." And I said, "I did it. It's unbelievable. I did it. This is unbelievable. I said, I can't wait to go to school tomorrow. Like, this is the most incredible thing." And everybody's freaking out. And I just kept going, "This is it. It's me. I did it. And I point out that even though in later years I found out that God is probably not a Yankee fan, but that pure feeling that I talked to God and that God heard me and that he changed something because I spoke to him, that as a very little kid, that's the essence of what tefillah is. Feel is not about a particular text. I mean, it is that as you go further. Don't get me wrong, the texts are written by Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, by David HaMelech. The texts have unbelievable significance. But we can't skip to the texts. We can't skip. We have to have that little kid experience of just talking to God and realizing that he could change anything if he wants. And that was one of my first experiences in Tefillah. When I talk to like old people, remember, this year I gave that in...
Wait a minute, Shaul, shoot us.
No, I said that this year for the first time ever. I was in the Riverdale Jewish Center for Rosh Hashanah, and I told that story. It was the first time I had ever told the story actually in the Bronx, to Jews in the Bronx. And like, it didn't occur to me that Riverdale is like the Bronx, but Riverdale is so the Bronx. And people were like standing up and screaming. They remembered that moment. I didn't know it was you. So it worked well for the... I do hopefully, Nader, that this time next year there'll be a Tefillah Sefer, of which this will be one of many, many, many chapters. And, you know, I hope Hashem gives me the ability, please, I could use a hand on it, to finish this thing. Have a good night.
Thank you.